newspaperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis on what's going on in the news media in America and on how decisions are reached in American newsrooms with some veteran journalists. I'm Rex Smith from the Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union, here in Studio D, here at the Alan S. Shartok Broadcast Center on Central Avenue in Albany. Our producer, David Gustina, is sitting in front of a microphone here. My colleague, Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette and former vice president of the New York Press Association, is here. How y'all doing?
Just the three of us.
You know, I think Walter Cronkite and Edward R. Murrow are rolling in their graves, don't you think?
Don't you think? I mean, obviously, that is the big story we need to get to right away. Paramount, the owner of CBS, agreeing to pay $16 million if President Trump will drop a lawsuit that essentially boiled down to a politician's gripe that 60 Minutes had edited an interview with Kamala Harris, his 2024 opponent, in a manner that he did not like. A lawsuit that every legal expert said was virtually laughable, a $20 billion lawsuit that he settles, by the way, for 0.08% of what he was asking for. Notwithstanding that, it is still a big deal that Paramount is paying $16 million to the president for really what amounts to extortion, right?
Right. And this comes as Paramount was seeking government approval for sale to Skydance Media, even though they say there was no connection. Obviously, there is a connection. I also should note that one of the provisions of the settlement is that CBS has agreed to, for now on, give full transcripts of presidential interviews or presidential candidate interviews to release them, which is like, would you release a full details of every interview you've ever done in the media? I would not do that. I mean, I know nowadays it's kind of part of the social media landscape to run these full interviews, but we become stenographers, or I guess the media version of stenographers. 60 Minutes did nothing wrong. I can see lawsuit settlements with ABC News, even though I think that the George Stephanopoulos settlement was wrong. There was a slight error he made. And obviously, Fox News made major errors in their settlement over Dominion voting. But this, they did absolutely nothing wrong. This is a horrible precedent.
Well, and now Trump has made, what, $32 million between CBS and ABC?
And if you add in the law firms, he's got over $1 billion. And so what's been obvious, really, is that this is extortion at a level that would make Tony Soprano blush. You know, media companies and other paying $1 billion, really, to try to make the president of the United States feel good, to get him to take his knee off their necks.
Well, and the problem is perception is reality. So how do you perceive this as the American people? I love what Dan Rather said. Judy sent these comments around. He was asked about it. He says, you settle a lawsuit when you've done something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do anything wrong. On CBS's part, they edited an interview for air. That gets done right here at WAMC all the time.
Absolutely.
And it's for no reason whatsoever. Then they wanted to make this deal. Trump knew it. He leaned on them. And the person with the money, Redstone, said, we're making the deal. Even though, oh, no, no, she recused herself, she says. And, oh, no, 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 this has no connection, they say. We did not offer an apology. Balderdash.
And this argument that they are paying only $16 million because that's what ABC News, and therefore it would not be considered a bribe that their shareholders could sue them over, that's balderdash. And also, kudos to Senator Elizabeth Warren,
yes,
who says she might hold a hearing to investigate whether or not this is a bribe that they are making to President Donald Trump to facilitate the sale of their company.
The difficulty is that every time you do this, of course, and I think this is what the rather comment gets to, it doesn't just damage the media ecosystem, but also the First Amendment itself. Because every time a media company bends the knee to Trump like this, it sets the stage for more to follow. The ABC News, $16 million because George Stephanopoulos said Trump had been found guilty of raping E. Jean Carroll when in fact it was sexually assaulting and libeling her, though a judge said it was the same thing.
Yes.
Right? A judge very clearly on the record said it's the same except for the... And then Meta pays $25 million, by the way, remember this, to settle a suit that Trump had filed after his Facebook account was pulled when he incited the January 6th riot. So Meta pays that $25 million to begin
That's
to get
right.
back on Trump's good side. So this is not a journalistic problem. This is a political problem. This is a First Amendment problem. How do you solve it? How do you solve it?
And it seems like we're the only ones who are concerned about this. You know, you don't hear a lot of outcry from the public when these kind of things happen. And I don't know how we can generate that level of concern because we need it. It's so blatant. You can't really cover a scandal when it's right out there in the open. And that's what's happening time and time again. CBS has really hurt their brand. I would advise Larry Ellison is to lower his price or lower the price he's willing to pay for the company because they've damaged their credibility. I mean, 60 Minutes going forward, you're going to have in the back of your mind, you know, have the overlords looked over what they're producing and put their thumb on it.
Well, think about it, guys. This is self-immolation. We've talked about for-profit journalism and the dangers because money's involved. And this is just your prime example. We have done it to ourselves. And the fear, the overall fear, the atmosphere that has been created was enough to chill the press. Now we're actually making stupid moves to now make it more likely that the press will be attacked and sued in the future. And I'm convinced that Judy's right, and we're seeing some signs of it already, that they're going to be trying to prosecute journalists as much as possible now, because over all these years, and with the bifurcation and the splitting of the media through multiple channels and social media, we've lost the sense of what a free press really means in this country, because we see that information is everywhere. But what's the quality of that information? What is the information you need, the spinach versus the information that you're entertained by? And that might be one of the other problems with for-profit media and programs like 60 Minutes. They're tied to entertainment wings of the operation, and they're kind of put together. And are we really trying to entertain, or are we trying to inform?
Well, the idea of the entertainment, of course, being that that is what channels the money into the news organization, but then came a time when news organizations began to have to make the money on their own. There was no expectation when Edward R. Murrow and Fred Friendly were running CBS News that that they were going to make money. This was something that Mr. Paley did, William Paley, the owner of CBS, did CBS News because it was the right thing to do, and his entertainment program subsidized it. Then came the time in the 60s, just to check the historical record of this, that people started saying, well, no, the news divisions need to stand on their own. And it was just at the time that TV was getting very profitable and newspapers were diminishing. One newspaper after another began closing. Well, really in the 60s, even before the internet began to really bang away at them. And now we're in a situation where we don't have either a rising generation that understands and appreciates the value of the media. I think that's what you were getting at, David. You know, if you look at our schools, I hate to pick on education, but, you know, the latest assessment of the quality of American education shows if you in the annual, every 4 years, there's a testing of 15-year-olds globally. And the United States ranks 35th in our educational achievement. We're below Vietnam and Malta and Taiwan and Singapore. There are many, many educational programs that are so much better than America's. We are not training a generation of students to understand and appreciate the value of free speech in our society, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very hard to get that back, in my opinion, because when you look at what's happened since, if we want to go back to the 60s that you mentioned, when there were basically four television channels that you could watch, I've made this argument before, but when the president spoke or there was major legislation, we were more likely to be on the same page because there were fewer choices to be made. And each of those channels gave you the basic same thing. But now, whether it's Fox and you lean to the right or you choose an MSNBC because you lean to the left, we're in totally different worlds.
Yeah.
And those worlds are having a real hard time coming together over anything. Combine that with the obvious divisions in Washington, and you have a recipe for no one en masse appreciating information like they used to and seeing it as trustworthy and credible and viable and necessary for the success of a civil society. We've lost faith in our institutions, and probably the top one is the media.
You know, on this Independence Day weekend, it would be a nice thing if we all took a moment and thought about our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and especially the First Amendment and what it means to how we live and what our future is going to be. It's just, if any day of the year is the year, you know, the 4th of July would be the day. It's an independent press. And that's one of the problems, I think, with the 60 Minutes lawsuit was the fact that it was tied to a big corporation. I think that has been one of the serious downfalls of large media companies. If you're an independent media organization, you are far more able to withstand these kinds of pressures.
Well, let me push back a little bit about that. The reason that 60 Minutes has strength as a reporting institution is because it's tied to a big organization. Big organizations have big power to be able to withstand this kind of attack from the president if they will. You know, a big company can handle it. Now, I agree, publicly traded companies are problematic because you have stock that can, you know, you have quarterly reports and shareholders looking for just their dollars, especially if they're held by venture capitalists or money is being held by such firms who don't really have a commitment to First Amendment. But there is a value. You know, a smaller company, smaller than CBS, would have caved more quickly. They wouldn't have had the lawyers to stand up to it. So I don't think the problem is size as much as it is strength, backbone.
Well, I think you're wrong and you're right, sort of, Rex, but I agree with Judy Moore, because the reason this failed was because the deal was too big to pass up. The Skydance deal was too much on the line and they couldn't give it up. And they had no backbone. You're right. There was no backbone there. Even though Sherry Redstone, I saw the speech in front of a group of journalists talking about how important journalism was to a free society. You may want to go watch that again, Sherry.
Yeah. And the difficulty, of course, as I say, this ultimately is a political problem, because we are sitting here attacking Paramount for giving in and CBS for being big. The problem is Donald Trump. The problem is we have a president who is a thug, who is attacking the media, who you made a light, you mentioned briefly that there may be prosecution of journalists. You know, Kristi Noem, the governor of my home state of South Dakota, formerly.
Lucky you.
Aren't I something? We really produce the best people
out
there.
Is that the Mount Rushmore state?
Yes, it is.
they're talking about putting Donald Trump on the
mountain. Oh, yeah.
There's no room on the mountain.
I veered off course. Sorry, Rex.
Chisel down one of the people he doesn't like.
That's right. Get rid of that guy, you know.
Washington.
Well, Jefferson was the crux of the Democratic Party, was there. But Kristi Noem, as I was about to say, is now talking about the possibility of prosecuting journalists for an app that was released that enables people to see where ICE officers are. And this was described in a CNN report. And Kristi Noem is now saying, I think maybe we ought to look at prosecuting these people at CNN for airing a story about an app
that will identify where ICE agents are. But there was already precedent for that, because she and the agency already went after a local public media station in California for reporting where ICE agents were during a newscast that they had been spotted somewhere. I don't know exactly where it was in California. And someone reported it to Noem, and they went after the station. They're going to look into the license, right? So this is all designed. They understand what they're doing here. This is strategic, too, you know. We're going to silence the press. We're going to create a chill so that we don't even in the future have to do anything drastic. We'll get most people to conform and say the right things and Look what's coming up after the big, beautiful bill and all the fallout from that. How are we going to report that? Are stations going to go hard on the administration or go lighter? Or how are they going to report it?
Yeah, even President Trump in an interview with Fox News' Maria Bartiromo suggested that the administration should go after journalists for violating the Espionage Act. I mean, this is out there. This app about ICE agents is so similar to these apps that are out there that let you know where the
Waze, police are.
Mm-hmm. And so are they going to go after those as well? It's the same concept. It's chilling. They're using every tool they can and tools they don't even have or they're at their disposal to put our nation under their thumb.
Now, the problem is that the right-wing media, by which we mean Fox News and its imitators, are cheering this along. And so the audience for that doesn't even have a sense that there's anything wrong with this, that there is. And I blame us, all of us, for years of not caring enough about the First Amendment, about teaching people about the Constitution, about giving people a sense of what it really means to have freedom in America.
How do we do that, right? We have an opportunity because we have the airwaves and the space
and
to
the
do
ink.
That.
And the ink.
And the ink, the space is what it is. I don't want to say tout our own horn because what we're talking about here is part of the Bill of Rights. It's part of the mission of the country, which is to be a democracy. But who else is going to report it if we don't talk about it? Where are people going to hear it except in history class where they study the Constitution and other things? We need to, instead of on this 4th of July, report another barbecue or what's going on at the track or something that's more ice cream than spinach, maybe spend some time on our airwaves reminding people about the importance of information you can trust.
You know, civics education, we've talked about it a lot in the past, and media literacy is important, but man, it depends on who controls the curriculum. Out in Oklahoma, they're talking about putting in the curriculum a discussion about the 2020 election and whether or not it was really won by Joe Biden. I mean, it depends on who's doing the teaching or what is being taught. And that is something I'm really concerned about going forward. That's why I think trusted institutions, those of us that are left, need to step up and do more. Every day, every little bit, every post on social media, make the points that that matter. And eventually, you'll get through to at least somebody.
The problem is that this president has the shock value is lost. He just does so many outrageous things, says so many. We were talking about him using the F word as the president of the United States on live television. This man does not get embarrassed about anything. And he's made this an era where, try to shock me, you won't.
Trump perfume, for example.
So what investigation, what major investigation, think of Watergate, what thing's going to come out that's going to stick?
That's going to stick. I mean, that is the problem. There is reporting every day that is really good, very strong reporting about offenses against the Constitution, about questions that are, mm-hmm. that are valid questions being raised about the way that this administration is handling matters. And that good reporting doesn't reach people because they're not paying attention. People don't know what they don't know. People who are, and this is because increasingly, of course, our news is delivered by algorithm. We get information based upon what we like to look at. And I've said on this show for many years that we need to have journalists trained in new media techniques. Now, I think it is an amazing thing. Listen to this. And so the mayoral election in New York City, the primary was won by the candidate who was able to reach a young audience.
That's right.
With new media. Zoran Mandami is a guy who was able to deliver vertical video, as they say, you know, video shot like on a phone, in an engaging way, a great communicator, inexperienced, 33 years old, really shouldn't have been the guy who was able to do this, but great communication skills and an obvious listening capacity made him the candidate who people responded to. Now, it may be a different world in New York City, of course, because it's a primarily Democratic city, but it is a very diverse community where what that election showed was how you can get through to people with smart use of the media. And I just think that we need to get better at this. We journalists need to be able to deliver information that way. We need to mimic Zoran Mamdani, if you will, and try to give information to people in a way that they can digest it so that they better understand what's going on.
Yeah, I've long thought, or long believed, that we're often the problem. People don't read our stories because they're too boring, or we're not presenting them in a correct way. They're too long. They're too top heavy. They're too, they use too much gibberish. The other thing about the New York City mayoral race, it showed that the reporters, the political reporters, too often rely on mainstream or established political operatives, and they were. That's the kind of wisdom they were channeling into their stories, you know, that this was an outlier, that he's too leftist. And I thought that bias came through loud and clear in that coverage. That's what political reporters do. They look at the polls, they talk to the pollsters, they talk to the consultants. And in the meantime, they're not really seeing what's happening on the street, and they're not giving a newcomer the credit that he rightfully earned.
Very good point. If the reporters had been as engaged on the street as Mamdani was himself, that they would have seen this coming.
Instead of just sitting in their offices and talking to consultants and political leaders, because the establishment clearly was against him, the Democratic political establishment.
And assumed that the old way of reaching voters, which was the Cuomo approach of getting the endorsements and getting the PACs lined up and having $25 million in his super PAC, assumed that that would be the way that the race would be settled.
So I think what you're saying is we journalists need to get out in the street and walk the length of Manhattan.
Hey, exactly. How about that? That's a great thing. And by the way, something else, David, before we sat down here, you handed us this really interesting story about just looking back at Jon Stewart's impact. When Jon Stewart took over the Daily Show, however many years ago that was, satire became such an important element in delivering information to people. He became, and satire always has. I mean, think of Will Rogers, who was a great communicator and reached people.
Oh, man, you are dating yourself.
Think of George Carlin.
Will Rogers.
Yeah, okay, he died in
George Carlin.
Let's modernize it a little bit.
That's not modern. Anyway, how about that guy, Samuel Clemens? You know him. I know my buddy Sam.
Where was the horse?
but really, satire does have a role nowadays, especially, and I think we need to get better at that in delivering information in ways that it is accessible to people. And people are working on it. Visual journalism is improving, but delivering information to people in a way so that they understand it and getting people to appreciate the values that have been underlying American progress for generations that are now being challenged by this administration.
Well, he peels back the layer and says, you know, you're not fooling any of us career politicians. You know, he talks about partisan hacks. One of the things on Jon Stewart's show that's been picked up by others is they have like a theme of the day. And that one of the things that he used to do is it would be a phrase that either the Democratic side was using or the Republican side was using. So you would follow all the shows that Republicans appeared on, and they were using the exact same phrase.
Right.
So the phrase would go out each week. You get on, you have your partisan discussions. And this was what Stewart would criticize in a funny way, but add a certain amount of clarity, sort of cut through the garbage, the obfuscating language, and just laid it bare. We all know what you're doing. You're all following each other to the same end, and we see through your nonsense. That has been proven in poll after poll across this country, that both sides are fed up with Washington and the way they practice their supposed art.
You know, I've got to get a shout out to John Oliver, too, because he
Absolutely.
Is just fabulous.
New Jon Stewart.
Oh, yeah. In-depth investigation that they've checked, and it's accurate, and it's just presented so well, and with a degree of levity that keeps you engaged. I mean, God bless him for doing what he does.
He's the one I saw where he took Sherry Redstone of CBS and showed us the event where they were presenting awards for the journalists of CBS, and she was going on and on about the integrity of the network and how they will always be protecting journalism. And that the rest of the country doesn't see unless they watched John Oliver and have some context. These programs, though hilarious on many points, they are providing context that the regular media doesn't do on a regular basis anymore.
Well, I think there's a lot of context in the reporting. I think it's just not getting through to people. I think there's some great journalism being done. And the problem is, again, a political problem that is finding manifestation in its conflict with real journalism. Before we go today, just one more point. Bill Moyers has died. One of the giants of journalism, really. A guy who made such a difference. And in fact, his contributions to journalism were significant indeed. As a commentator, as an analyst, as somebody who did significant documentary work and inspired it, among others. So there are great journalists still doing this kind of work. It's just that it is so much more difficult in an era when we're being challenged by a political establishment that doesn't have respect for the First Amendment as we used to have. Thanks all for joining us. I'm Rex Smith here with Judy Patrick and David Gustina. Hope we come back again next week for The Media Project.
It's a good thing I edit this program.
Yeah.
It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, former vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.